T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now the world don't move to the beat of just one drum. What might be right for you may not be right for some. A man is born, he's a man of means. Then along come two. They got nothing but the genes, but they got
Chris Whittingham here on 560 WQAM. Danny Garcia is playing TV theme songs for some reason. This, of course, is Different Strokes.
Kind of story, Chris.
Of course they do.
Everybody's got a time to shine.
I actually loved this show. I believe it was a Nick at Night show when I was a kid. And I was a big fan of the Different Strokes. It was probably the old show that I most enjoyed watching.
Well, to show my age, this show, I would watch it on what was then known as WCIX Channel 6, Be a Part of It All. Long before Channel 6 was NBC, Channel 6 was a UHF station that would play Different Strokes, Knight Rider, Silver Spoons, a bunch of stuff. They had the Transformers, G.I. Joe, had the kid lineup on lock. And then eventually, NBC purchased, NBC was 4, then NBC purchased 6, and then they did the switchover.
Yeah.
I remember when the switchover happened.
That was a big deal, right?
It was a big deal. And it took me a long time to get used to it.
I once had lunch with a bunch of friends who were like maybe 8, 9 years older than me. And we had a lunch, and it emerged as a hashtag called hashtag You See Chris. And it was basically the whole lunch is, you see Chris, when Channel 6 switched over to NBC, it was a big deal. And it was like all these things from the 90s and things that happened. And so I've been explained.
To quote Rocky from Rocky Balboa, 90s, more like, you know, the 80s there, you know?
I've been explained a number of these things. The starting lineups are happening right now for UNC and Duke. And one of those college basketball games that feels like, you know, holy crap, as much as the tournament is great, this is awesome. This is the pageantry of college basketball. And get in the door for UNC Duke, $2,500. And we'll get to that later on in the program. But I want to talk about some Miami Dolphins right now. And it's because some stories have emerged in the aftermath of Dolphins assistants giving interviews last Friday. And the various reporters are now starting to write off them a little bit at a time. And Adam Beasley wrote a story today that basically received confirmation that Devontae Parker will not be back with the Miami Dolphins. He's unlikely, but he's all but gone, I believe was the phrasing in his story. And so all but gone is another one that was used for Ryan Tannehill. And then Ryan Tannehill is already in that range of someone that it's not even a question he's going to go. And I don't think people really understand that, oh yeah, it's at that level. He's gone. Like, he is not going to be brought back without question, undoubtedly, no longer going to be the quarterback of the Miami Dolphins. Just as I'm not entirely convinced, but the Dolphins are kind of going in a direction of tanking. And like, I heard Omar here on Monday, it was like, oh no, it's happening. It's like, I talked to opposing executives, I talked to people within the Dolphins, it's happening. This is what they're doing. And I'm like, okay, I guess this is going to happen now, because I'm kind of thinking at the last moment that they're going to go out and like trade for Antonio Brown and sign Le'Veon Bell, that like those are moves that they're going to make, and that they're going to keep Ryan Tannehill, and that they're going to try and go again and rebuild in the same way that they always have, which is get a couple of big price free agents, give them big money, and go again. And so Devontae Parker is the latest one. Now, let's start first by saying this. Another disappointing first-round pick, right? And it is sort of the legacy of the Dolphins. But not only is this the legacy of the Dolphins, for me, the legacy of the Dolphins is you had a first-round pick that didn't pan out. And look, I mean, they really only pan out at a 50% rate. That's basically what the NFL draft is. The first round, it's 50%, and as you go on, the odds get lower. And it's hard to have a repetitive formula for building in the draft. And so from a Dolphin standpoint, obviously you feel pretty good about Laremy Tunsil. You feel pretty good about Minka Fitzpatrick. You drafted well with Xavien Howard. But you also have Charles Harris, who hasn't done a damn thing. And you have Juwan James, who's kind of that area in between. Oh my God, Zion Williamson is hobbling back to the bench, shoe in hand. Hearts and mouths at Cameron Indoor Stadium. Oh yeah, his foot just kind of gave out, didn't it? Oh, that looks unpleasant. I mean, the horror on the faces of the people at Cameron Indoor. Barack Obama is behind Mike Krzyzewski, and he has a face of horror.
You think that's bad? Watch the faces of the front office of the New York Knicks.
Yeah,
right now.
The Knicks, and I mean Cleveland and Phoenix.
Anyone
and
else
Atlanta.
In the air quote lottery?
Yeah, I mean those top five teams right now. Hearts and mouths. He's trying to put his shoe back on. He's being talked to by a trainer. I mean, this is less than a minute into the North Carolina game. My goodness, what scenes at Cameron Indoor? Anyway, so. You have kind of the full spread of first-round picks for the Dolphins, but the difference between the Dolphins and everyone else is, generally, other teams, when they screw up a first-round picks, that guy is still in charge, right? Or you can say, oh, that guy screwed it up. But the thing about the Dolphins organization is, Devontae Parker just goes by the wayside, you let him go, maybe some other team will pick him up, and there's no one really still here that's that accountable for it. That was his pick.
Well, actually, I'm gonna say something because I've been meaning something's really kind of bothered me about the whole Chris Greer being hired thing, and it's not the normal things that the morons complain about. What bothers me is this: okay, we're cleaning house, we're starting over, we're tanking, which is the right move in my opinion. But Chris Greer has been here for 18 years in the scouting department, and what you're basically telling me is that it's been everybody else but him, you know. But him, he's the guy that wanted to draft Drew Brees, but we took Jamar Fletcher instead. He's the guy that wanted to make all the right moves, and everyone else just got in his way. That's what you're basically telling me. And you know what? I think that's kind of BS.
And it's not an entirely unfair complaint because, again, he survived all of it. I will say, though, if there's anyone that's in a place to know what someone's thoughts were at the time, Zion Williamson is walking back to the locker room. Oh, no. No.
Heck of a limp, too.
My God. He honestly looks like he has one of those LeBron bodies, too, that, like, is unbreakable. That, you know, he's never going to have a major injury. He's just this thick, you know, cut from marble that there's no chance that guy can break. And less than a minute into the North Carolina game, he's going to have a triumphant return. I'll guarantee you that. We'll keep track of this. No, but it's a great point because we have been told that Chris Greer has been in charge of the draft. And this past year, they drafted Mike Kosicki in the second round. The year before, they drafted Charles Harris. So I understand what you're saying, which is that he's been given a measure of power, but he's never been in charge of the whole thing. Right? He's never been given the opportunity. Maybe Mike Tannenbaum did overrule him on certain picks. Maybe, you know, other people have gotten in the way. Adam Gase maybe has said, oh, no. I want this guy. And so if there's anyone that's as well-placed to correctly analyze that, it's the guy who put him in charge that could have led a full search of the entire NFL of who he wanted, and he said, no, I want Chris Greer. And so I think we do have to at least trust a little bit. I mean, I we should judge his resume harshly if things don't work out, but Stephen Ross put him in charge despite these failures because maybe he thinks, oh, his broader talent is being hidden by the role that we've given him. And so I'm willing to at least entertain that. But in the end, the person who made the Devontae Parker, did Dennis Hickey make the Devontae Parker pick or did Tannenbaum? That might have been the first year.
That was definitely a Tannenbaum pick.
Yeah, I think that was his first draft.
Hickey was the Jarvis Landry year and the Juwan James year.
Yeah. So that was his first round pick. 4 years later, he's gone. And that's kind of been a repetitive theme, is that there's been so much turnover in the organization, and it's the repetitive cycle of the Dolphins, that they draft guys, they don't work, and realistically, no one's there to really take the responsibility for it. And so It just, again, you can't really complain too much about it because there's it's not like you're going to fire someone for screwing up the Devontae Parker pick. That person's already been fired. And so he's going to go, and you're watching a first-round pick walk out the door with no value added, either on the field or, you know, via trade. And it's just, they're massive steps back. Massive steps back. When you get nothing on a first-round, I get it, like, maybe it gives you one good season and then flames out. Like, even if he had the path of Jay Ajayi or Kenyon Drake, who had a good season, a good stretch. I mean, Devontae Parker never even had that. Never had a five-game period where you're like, oh, I get it. And, you know, it just didn't happen for him, or injuries or something unlucky, or, you know, personality. It just never happened. You got nothing out of the pick. And you're looking around going, well, no one's really going to be held responsible for that because that person's no longer here. It just, it is the consistent lament of the Dolphins that you're just never going to be able to really hold someone to account for the continued failure of the most important thing. The most important thing in football is drafting well. It is the most important thing of team building. And again, you obviously understand why people obsess about the draft, but you don't really know the answer to that question. I mean, you kind of knew going into this past year, but you think about it. Devontae Parker was selected in April of 2015, and we didn't really know that the Dolphins were kind of done with it until February of 2019. It's a long time to really properly analyze something. And again, by the time we get to this place that we are now, how many times have we had Devontae Parker conversations? Where we go, oh, this might be the year, or he's a disappointment. You've kind of ran out of the emotional energy to really be mad about it. And so that's where we are now with Devontae Parker, and he's another guy that's gone. Here's another one, Juwan James. Juwan James is a question about whether or not he comes back. Now, you look at the offensive line market in free agency, not very strong. There are not a ton of options out there. We had Tony Pauline on the radio on Monday. He said this is among the weaker tackle drafts that we've had in a while. And so that's another area that you don't know what you're going to, you know, what the Dolphins are going to do. And if they let Juwan James go, that's another first-round pick out the door. And that's another first-round pick that was selected by another guy. Now, I believe it was Barry Jackson in the Herald reported today that the offensive line coach has analyzed some tape, and he likes Juwan James, and he would prefer if he stayed. And so that's a good thing. You've got your two tackles. You feel good about it. You use first-round picks. That's an area you want to use first-round picks, and appears to have worked out. So if you keep him, that's a good thing. If you extend Xavier Howard, good thing. If you extend Laramie Tunsil, good thing, and steps in the right direction. But again, now you're also dealing with this counter question of, if you're tanking, then might those guys be too good and they might help you win? Because again, and Omar illustrated the point perfectly, it's not just about tanking so that you can be in the top five. It might be tanking so you can be in the top one of the 2020 draft. If you really want Tua, whoever finishes with the worst record in the league next year ain't trading that pick. Like, if Tua is as good as he was last year in this upcoming season for Alabama, and they win the national championship, and he has a great season, the team with the number one pick, there isn't a price. I mean, you might, okay, if you said, I'll trade all seven of my picks for the next 2 years, okay, we might have a conversation. But a realistic offer to get Tua back, to move from 4-1, like, it's going to be impossible. So you might have to have the worst record in the league, and if you have enough good players, that might stop you from doing that. And if you extend Juwan James, you extend Laramie Tunsil, you extend Xavier Howard, they might be too good.
I agree keeping Juwan James would be too good. And it would, number one, I don't think we should keep him because he's just going to be too expensive at a position that we can get cheaper in the draft down the line, younger, cheaper down the line. But if you want to get the number one pick right now, it's a very simple thing the Dolphins have to do to get the number one pick in the following year's draft to get to it. It's very simple. Don't change a thing in the quarterback room. If we walked into next year, I mean, than Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, so you let Ryan Tannehill go and
if
everyone
you
else is the same.
My quarterbacks next year are Brock Osweiler, David Fales, and Luke Falk.
Yeah. Job done.
Job completed.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing for me with the current team, right? So in terms of good players that you have, right? So you're saying you don't want to keep Juwan James because it might be too expensive. The thing for me about the current roster is there aren't really a ton of guys you're going to be paying. Like, to me, if you're going to pay for someone, I don't mind paying the guy that you drafted and developed. Like, I understand if you don't want to spend in free agency, but if you have to, you have to spend a little extra to keep the guy that you drafted and develop. Like, okay, so right now on the roster, it's going to be hard to get rid of Rashad Jones for one more year because of his guaranteed deal. You can get rid of Robert Quinn for free. You can get rid of Kenny Stills and pay out $5.5 million. You can get rid of Devontae Parker for free. I think you probably keep Kenny Stills in this equation. You can get rid of Andre Branch and only have to pay out $2 million. You can get rid of Kiko Alonso and only have to pay out $3.5 million. You can get rid of Josh Sitton and only have to pay out $2 million. So realistically, here are the expensive cap charges that we know the Dolphins are going to have next year. Rashad Jones at 17. Albert Wilson at 8. Bobby McCain at 6. And TJ McDonald at 6. That's their salary list right now above $4 million that we probably know, based off of guarantees, they're going to have to keep. That's like four guys. So if you're telling me that, you know, your projected salary cap next year is $195 million, and you're only paying, as of right now, four guys, then I'm okay with paying two or three more because you're still going to enter the following year with $100 million in cap space or thereabouts.
Well, at the same time, you have to ask yourself, what are you going to end up paying these guys? Because number one, you're the Dolphins, so you're going to have to overpay them. All right.
Yeah.
Number one, Juwan James is going to command top right tackle offensive line.
Was that
money.
$10 million?
Yeah, it's a lot of money. And Xavier Howard is going to want. That's not even getting into Xavier Howard.
16-17
top corner money in the league. Are you really willing to commit that? To commit that kind of money and hamstring yourself going forward. And I love
But here's the thing. I don't think it's hamstringing. I think in the NFL, it's too hard. It's too hard to really hamstring yourself, especially when you're going into a year where you're basically going to be using a lot of young players. Okay, so right now, the top corner contract in the NFL is Josh Norman. He makes an average of $15 million. Just below that, Tremaine Johnson, 14.5, Xavier Rhodes, 14, Patrick Peterson, 14. So if we're talking about $13-14 million a season for Xavier Howard, I really don't think that's that bad. Top right tackle money. The only right tackle that makes double digit million dollars is Lane Johnson. He makes $11 million a year from Philly. Then it's Ricky Wagner of Detroit at 9.5. Morgan Moses a little under 8. Chris Hubbard a little over 7. Then you're into the sixes. So if you're telling me that you can get away with paying Xavier Howard $14 million a year and Juwan James 8, I really don't think
okay,
it's that
well,
bad.
How long, well, then let me ask you this other question, because this is the other issue that comes down to it. How long are those guys going to be good? How long is Xavier Howard going to be playing at that level? How long is Juwan James going to be playing at that level? And by the time you're ready to compete at that high level, which we're looking at 2-3 years down the line, are they still going to be playing at the level that you paid them for 3-4 years down the line for the past?
I would say yes. Juwan James is 26. Xavier Howard is 25. I mean, you're telling me a corner is still going to be good at 28? That's not out of the realm of possibilities. I mean, an NFL lineman can play until 33, 34 and still be solid. Like, I think these can be like long-term building blocks. I really do. And especially in Tunsil's case, you definitely pay that money. And Xavier as well, because we're talking about the four anchors of football, quarterback, left tackle, pass rusher, corner. You got two of those four guys. And really what you're trying to tank for is to find the third. And then you can keep going at the defensive end position until you find it. Okay, so you fail on Charles Harris. Go again. Try and find another one. But I do think that I'm totally down with we're not spending any money on free agents. We're not spending any money on trying to bring other players in. But to draft and develop your own guys, you got to give them second contracts. Because otherwise, we continue the cycle of we're not keeping our guys that we feel good about. You let Landry go. You let Lamar Miller go. You let Olivier Vernon go. And look, some of those decisions are certainly justified. I mean, Olivier Vernon has not been the same guy. I think you've been more than fine in the running back position since Lamar Miller left. You obviously let Ajayi go. So, those are the draft picks you hit on. You found good players there, and you've let some of them go. I think even if you're trying to lose next year, even if maybe you're trying to save some money in the process, I don't think that means you let your draft picks go that you found, that you developed, that you did a good job on, and say, we're going to let them go because they either got too expensive or because we want draft picks back in return. So I think, and look, this might be, I described it yesterday on my podcast as chemotherapy, that the Dolphins roster might be going through chemotherapy. Like, it's that extreme that you just totally clear everything out and you basically destroy everything so you can, you know, start from the bottom. I can understand that as a strategy, but I don't think a major signing at corner or at right tackle to keep your guys is going to prevent you from being a 2-win team as opposed to a 6-win team. Like, I don't think keeping those guys makes you that many wins better.
That's absurd, because at one time Cleveland had Joe Hayden when Joe Hayden was at the top of his game, and having one of the best corners in the league meant nothing.
They had Joe Thomas, one of the best, he's a Hall of Fame first ballot left tackle.
No, that's asinine if you think that those guys are going to keep you from getting the first round pick.
Yeah, yeah.
My concern is whether they're still going to be useful chips down the line and whether they're going to affect
our salary
going forward.
I think they're at an age, and I think the salary cap is large enough, and it keeps going up. It's not like the salary cap is going to go down. I mean, right now it's 100.
Can the Dolphins franchise Juwan James right now?
They can.
And be able to trade him to get value back for him?
They can franchise him. I don't know. And my question is the franchise value of all offensive tackles? So the franchise is, I think it's the top. It's like the median of the average of the top five players at your position.
Which is the way we talked about, which is about $8-9 million.
No, but that's at right tackle. If you include all tackles,
oh, okay, that's a different conversation.
Then like Taylor Lewan makes 16, Solder 15.5, Jake Matthews 14.5, Trent Williams 13.5, Russell Okung 13, Teron Armstead 13. Like, then you're talking about paying Juwan James $13-14 million next year.
But if you're going to pay him,
and then you can't trade Juwan James after franchise tagging him, and expect a team to then give him a $50 million. That's a lot of outlay for. I mean, you might get a fifth round pick back, but you're not getting a good pick back in exchange for franchise Juwan James. So, I do think that there are ways with which you can keep some of these guys, and the salary cap is too high. And if you don't sign free, like, as much as you talk about the Heat's free agent, you know, bad signings, when they paid Kenny Stills, Kiko Alonso, Andre Branch a lot of money to guys who aren't really that impactful, instead of valuing their own draft guys like, you know, Landry and Ajayi, they also kind of had their offseason that mired their mediocrity. And so I prefer they just did it with their draft picks rather than with free agents. And obviously the Devontae Parker news sucks because he just wasn't very good as a Dolphin. That's a first-round pick gone. But I don't think that means you let other picks go when you found good players there. Coming up next, I want to talk some Duke, UN, some Duke, North Carolina, and some NBA, as there's a lot to cover there. That's next year on WQAM. Radio.com. Radio.com.
I'll give you a hint. You ever watch Channel 7 in the afternoon?
Is it Matlock?
There you go.
Why do I associate Channel 7 in the afternoon with Matlock?
Because Channel 7 has been playing Matlock and In the Heat of the Night in the afternoon for 30 years.
Oh, man. Chris Whittingham here on 560 WQAM, producer Danny on the other side. I hope you all didn't miss my handball rant earlier on in the program. One of my finer moments on the radio, where I'm reading Law 12 of the FIFA rulebook. I actually did that today. I Googled, because I've heard this before, like, you know, deliberate or intentional. And so I was like, you know, I'm going to look up this law. By the way, they don't call them rules. They call them laws, because it's important. It's a clear distinction between rules and laws.
Zion, rules can be broken. Laws, on the other hand.
Laws cannot, but not without punishment. Not without punishment. So North Carolina Duke is happening right now, and Zion Williamson has yet to return. So it was a bit of an awkward one. He's in the middle of the floor, kind of around the free throw line, and he plants, and it didn't seem like it was that bad, but his foot just kept giving out and giving out and giving out. It was like sliding, skidding against the floor, and it finally, you know, gave out. And so he has yet to return, according to Maria Taylor. He is still in the locker room.
Are you predicting a halftime return?
I don't know. Now, I do wonder, because Coach K has kind of fashioned himself as the NBA factory. And, you know, now, you know, all the top prospects go there. Does he want to continue that by saying, you know what, Zion, your future in the NBA is too important to play through this ankle injury that you just sustained? We don't know what the ankle injury is yet. So, I mean, it could be minor and he could go back out there, but I am. I think the odds of him returning are ever decreasing by the second, as he fails to come out of the locker room. You wonder if they're doing X-rays or MRIs back there and what's going on. But no Zion, and Duke is down 9, the number one team in the country, at home to North Carolina. What a story! But you feel bad for Zion because it's gonna be the number one pick in the draft. I mean, probably will end. I mean, even if he breaks his ankle, he'll be the number one pick in the draft. Because, I mean, it'll probably be healthy by the time the NBA season rolls around. And to me, and I want to cover some second half NBA storylines. For me, one of them, no question about it, is the race to the bottom of the NBA and how the balanced lottery odds changes everything. So right now, there are five teams that have a double-digit percent chance to get the number one pick in the draft. Phoenix, New York, and Cleveland are all tied for the bottom three. That's now even. So all those teams have a 14% chance to have the number one pick in the draft. Then in Chicago, 12.5%. Atlanta, 10.5%. Now, of that top five, I would say Phoenix, Cleveland, Chicago, from a Zion Williamson standpoint, would be pretty awful, right? I mean, Phoenix has a bunch of first, we talk about failed first-round picks. I mean, Phoenix has a few of those. They've basically been drafting in the top five for 10 years. And their best pick is someone who they took at 14 or 13, Devin Booker. And they just keep, they're drafting in the top five and drafting in the top five and drafting in the top five. And eventually, they're going to get it right. But for now, they're still an atrocious team. They've lost 15 in a row. And it's just a bad organization. And so, do you really want Zion starting his career there? Probably not for me. Then you have New York. New York is the most interesting generally. To the Miami fan, a bit terrifying. So if Zion goes to New York, for me, that basically, I already think it's happening. It really guarantees Kevin Durant going to New York for me.
Quick question, sidebar. Do you believe that on some level the NBA lottery is rigged?
No.
I do.
Well, I will. I
too many
I will say,
coincidences.
I don't know. I don't
year,
think
the year LeBron's coming out, Cleveland happens to have the first pick.
Okay, but then they
oh,
won.
Oh wait, A. Poland passed away, and now Washington has the first pick.
So here it is for me. Cleveland had the first pick in the draft 3 out of 4 years in a row. 3 out of 4 years. I don't think the NBA, like, if the NBA really wanted to rig the lottery, they would have given the Lakers the first pick in the draft twice. They would have given the Knicks the first round pick. Like, if it was really rigged, you wouldn't see Cleveland win 3 out of 4 lotteries. I will say, though, to your vantage point, I have heard Michael Davies, the co-host of Men in Blazers, he is a game show producer by trade, and he said that he has heard that the only reason why you'd have a lottery machine is if you wanted to fix the draw, right? That the only reason that you'd have a machine that, you know, with ping pong balls was to raise them. He didn't explain how. That's the only reason. He said really the most random way is if you had a chimpanzee pull a ball out of a bag. That's the most random way.
I would pay good money to see that.
Can you imagine if that's how the
Can
NBA
you imagine,
did their draft?
Like Adam Silver like standing there with a chimp and a ping pong ball.
That's correct.
All right, Sully the chimp. Get in there,
yeah,
Sully.
Right, yeah. That is the actual, he said that if you really wanted to have a random draw, chimpanzee and a bag, and that's how you do a random draw. And for me, it would just, there couldn't be enough video of that for me. If that's how the NBA
right
decided to
the
do
NBA
that.
Playoffs, yeah. Just Adam Silver,
right, exactly.
Monkey.
We go to Mark Jones, a chimpanzee, and Adam Silver. I mean,
live
the best.
At the San Diego Zoo.
Yeah. Yeah, or maybe like, you know, like how the NFL draft is moving locations. Maybe you take the lottery to zoos across America.
Zoos across the nation. Cincinnati.
One year it's Zoo Miami. Then you have it at what's the one in New York?
The one that's in Central Park.
Yeah. So that's how we do it. That is, if you really want to have a random draw, that's how you would do it. But that is not how we do it. And so I can understand that the ping pong machine lends itself to those questions. But I am not someone who is a believer in that. Otherwise, I mean, New York would win the lottery like every year. They haven't.
Well, it's just, you know, it's just all the little things. I know if I go back through like there's always like something that like you go,
okay.
Oh, that's weird. Like the one that really put me over the top was, you know, and God rest his soul, when Abe Pollin passed away. Abe Pollin, wonderful human being, great owner for Washington for many, many, many years. The Washington Wizards were not the number one team. But yet, this year, the Washington Wizards gets the number one pick with John Wall. You know, and I know John Wall hasn't exactly worked out, but it was on the heels of LeBron, of them getting LeBron. And then the second they lose LeBron, they get Kyrie. It just came on the heels of all that. And it's like, dude, this is just too fishy.
But my favorite thing about it, though, is that if you really wanted to make an argument on behalf of almost any team in the top five, you can say, here's why they would fix it. Phoenix, it would be, all right, they're finally going to turn around their rebuild. New York, obvious reasons. Cleveland, let's throw them a bone because they lost LeBron again. Chicago, we want Chicago to be good again. Atlanta, you know, it's a barren NBA market that would start selling tickets the moment that they got Zion. Like, you can mount an argument. I understand that some of those things are a bit bigger, but so in terms of the teams you'd want it to be, the Knicks. I mean, it would make for, you talk about the drama of the NBA. If they get the number one pick, I believe it's on the night of a Western Conference Finals game. Can you imagine, like, what happened to Miami in 2014, that the number one pick is Cleveland and LeBron's playing in a Conference Finals game that night, and Bill Simmons is on television going, well, I don't know if he was good in the first, LeBron was good in that first half, because he was thinking about, you know, Cleveland getting the number one pick. And it turned out he was right, that LeBron was thinking about going to Cleveland even then, and maybe that number one pick is the thing that put him over the edge. And so it'd be curious if the Knicks get the number one pick in the draft as Kevin Durant is playing in the Western Finals. I think Kevin Durant's already going to New York, but that's just that added layer of, hey, did you see that the Knicks got the number one pick in the draft? And I really do think that would become part of the conversation. And so New York, that's definitely a fascinating one. Cleveland, I mean, tired of Cleveland. But again, to start a rebuild,
New York is the obvious choice,
right?
No,
you know what? I think Atlanta is.
No way.
I think Atlanta's fun. They got Trae Young, John Collins, great young player. And if you're going forward with a young team of Trae Young, John Collins, and Zion Williams, that's a fun team. Like, that's a team that, like, maybe you don't realize it immediately, but by the 40 game mark of his first season, you'd be like, oh, Atlanta's fun. Like, I want to go watch Atlanta play.
Well, on that level, I'll give you that.
Yeah.
But let's be realistic about the Hawks as a franchise.
Yeah.
Because you got to kind of look at the whole
picture.
The Hawks are the perennial also-rans.
Yeah.
Whether they've had Dominique Wilkins or those Mutombo Mookie Blaylock teams with Steve Smith, or whether it was the recent with Al Horford and Joe Johnson. By the way, how good is that team if they take Chris Paul instead of Marvin Williams?
Yeah.
But the Hawks are that perennial also-ran team that, they, no matter how good a player you give them, they can never, ever close the deal. And they don't bring eyes to the NBA like Zion Williams going to the Knicks would.
Yeah. No, I know. And from a drama standpoint, I'm just saying from a basketball standpoint, I'd really enjoy Zion with Atlanta. Memphis is a meh for me. Washington might be fun. Washington, that might be the thing that rejuvenates their barren team right now is if they get him. New Orleans is another fascinating one, because then obviously he's your first building block to rebuild, and can you find the second in an Anthony Davis trade? And they might be able to go again pretty quickly. That's another one that it's like, well, New Orleans might not have to trade for it. Then you're getting into an area where it's probably not worth considering, but Dallas, if Dallas got all the way up there, I mean, your Zion, Doncic, and Porzingis is fun as hell. Then Orlando at 10. I saw today Chris Mannix was arguing on behalf of Miami deserving to win that lottery, because they're the only team that really hasn't tried to tank. I mean, they tanked one game at the end of the 2014-15 season, but hasn't really tried to tank when they've had multiple opportunities to do so. And wouldn't it be great if they were rewarded for that? They only have a 2% chance to win the lottery, but you're in that stage. But I mean, it's definitely New York is the definite answer for who you want to win the lottery. But outside, I mean, I think there's some interesting choices outside of it. Atlanta would be my number two. Maybe Phoenix 3 because they've got so many young players and, by God, can they please stop being at the bottom of the Western Conference. And actually, you might have a Western Conference next year where all 15 teams are trying to win, which would be a departure from what it's normally been. But the Zion thing is interesting, and yet he's not playing right now. He's injured, and I have yet to see an update on here it is. Duke basketball. Update, : Zion Williamson will not return. Knee. I thought it was an ankle. It looked like an ankle, but if it's a knee, if it's bad, that could...
This could change the sports landscape.
Really suck. Really suck. If it's bad.
Even if it isn't bad, do you play again this year?
Yeah, if it's like an MCL sprain, no. No, you don't play again. You don't play again. Unless it's like a sprain. I mean, no. There's no injury that's keeping you out of this game that's serious enough that... To me, I think his college career ended, which sounds hyperbolic, but we're in late February. The tournament starts in like 4 weeks. And so could he be back in time for the Final Four in 7 weeks? And is it worth it if you're Zion to play in the Final Four in 7 weeks?
To quote the great Ricky Waters, for who, for what?
Yeah. I think a knee injury that's keeping me out of tonight, they rule him out in, what, 30 minutes that they ruled him out? I think that might be it, as hyperbolic as that is to say. If it's a sprained MCL, I wouldn't play. It has to be like a, you know, bone bruise or something like that.
Something
like something soft that you know there's no ligament damage happening. If there's the slightest bit of ligament damage, done. Or at least he should be. All right, wrap things up. Coming up next, more NBA things we want to get to here. Again, Zion Williamson out for the night after playing less than a minute of Duke, North Carolina. Chris Whittingham here on QAM.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
Making your way in the world today takes everything you've got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. Wouldn't you like to get away? All those nights when you've got no
Chris
life.
Chris Whittingham here on 560 WQAM. I want to guess, but I don't want to guess because I'm going to be loud wrong. It's going to be bad. It's going to be bad that I don't know this.
You don't know this?
It's Cheers, right?
Thank you.
Okay. I was like 98% sure, but if you're wrong, you sound like an idiot. So I almost didn't want to guess because I sound like an idiot. Don't like sounding like an idiot. So do I do the 9:45 at night Zion Williamson got hurt and that's why college basketball is stupid? I think I want to do it.
I don't see any reason not to.
So Zion Williamson just got hurt. He has a knee injury. And will not return to tonight's game between Duke and North Carolina. It was the big game tonight. Everyone was fired up for it. You tune in to watch Zion. People paid a ton of money to watch Zion. $2,500 was the get-in-the-door rate for Cameron Indoor Stadium tonight. And everyone there is shell-shocked because Zion got hurt. Everyone in the crowd right now, I'm looking at it right now on television, is on their phones. Why? Because Zion got hurt. I mean, Zion has been the driving force of college basketball this year. All their games are crazy high rated. People are super into Duke basketball this year. I mean, people usually are, but more than usual into college basketball. Duke is making a ton of money. I mean, they always make a ton of money, but they're making a ton of money. And Zion Williamson does not get to be a pro because the NBA says so. And it's so broken, man. It's so, I mean, how does that happen? How, I mean, Zion Williamson might have insurance. And like I said, didn't look bad enough to where you don't think he's the number one pick in the draft. He's probably still going to get paid a lot of money. But he should be a pro. He was good enough to be a pro. If he was playing in the NBA right now, he would be contributing to a team, playing some minutes, and getting paid to play basketball. But there is a system. I mean, there is no other profession in the world where if you're good enough that you couldn't drop out of college, drop out of high school, and make money. I was working in radio while in college to study radio. In theory, I shouldn't have been allowed to be paid in the system of college sport. I was getting scholarships. I was on scholarship, and I was still allowed to make a living in radio, however much of a pittance it was, because it was a pittance. When you're 19 years old and start working in radio, you know.
It's better than nothing.
Yeah, no, for sure. I made more of a salary at $8.25 an hour. Yes, that's what I made when I started producing at $7.90. $8.25 than Zion Williamson made tonight for playing in front of a game. I mean, imagine you signed this contract. You get to the economic value of one ticket. One ticket sold. You could have made $2,500 tonight. $2,500 for one night's work, which lasted less than a minute.
What's always bothered me about the situation is that everybody wants the university to pay them and all that wonderful jazz. And I see their point. But why does the NCAA not treat them like they would any other amateur athlete? Like, if you're a swimmer and you go to college, you're an amateur athlete. If Subway wants to pay you, you know, to be like, hey, I'm, you know, a swimmer, they're not going to say anything. You're training to go to the Olympics. You're an amateur athlete. To me, they're amateur athletes. If Subway or, you know, Pete the Bob wants to pay him, pay him. Why does the university have to get involved?
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm 100% with you. Especially in basketball, where the shoes might be worth more than, you know, a salary that Duke could pay him. I mean, if you're Nike and you want to send a guy to Duke, pay him $800,000. My favorite thing, by the way, Cameron Indoor, is the moving of the arms near the player that's taking out the inbound. But yeah, I mean, you want Nike to be, you know, footing that bill, and they do. I mean, we're seeing via the FBI that the shoe companies are very involved in how much players get paid and where they go. And so I'm totally with you, but I think it should be totally separate. I think it should still exist, but like, to me, everything should be like baseball, where you can come out of high school, and in my opinion, you should be able to come out even sooner if you want, right? Like, I don't even understand why it's got to be 18, but okay, that's the legal working age. Let's call it that. But I don't understand why you can't come out of high school and play your professional sport. To me, as much as, you know, I think when I first started following soccer, your impulse is, well, how can we make soccer better? But you learn a lot of things about how their system works. And it's the ultimate capitalist system, and is the ultimately open system in every way. Open for anyone to become a professional, open for any team to become as high level as they want from any place in the country. There's a team in the Premier League called AFC Bournemouth that they have a capacity 10,000-seat stadium, and 7 years ago, they had to play a game on the final day of the season to be relegated from the fourth tier, to avoid being relegated from the fourth tier of English soccer. And 7 years later, they're in the Premier League. I mean, that's the ability that you have in the open system of English soccer, of European soccer. And the same goes for players. If you're a player, that's good enough. You can join a club from age 5 and play for their under 5 team. I mean, I don't know how much of a salary you make then, or, you know, or how expenses work or anything like that, but you're part of a club setup from age 5. And you can sign a professional contract and make your professional debut whenever you want. There is no age restriction. There is no draft. It's, did a team find a kid in its local area or somewhere in the country and bring him in and convince him to stay? And so you have players making their debut, age 17, age 16, because they're physically ready to go. And you know who gets to decide whether or not someone's physically ready to go? You. Like, the team, like, if the team brought in Zion Williamson, let's say, where's Zion Williamson from? And let's so let's say an academy. He's from Salisbury, North Carolina. So let's say the Charlotte Hornets have an academy where they find Zion Williamson at age 5, or age 10, age 12, age 14, whatever, and they bring him in and they keep him. When would Zion Williamson have made his debut for the Charlotte Hornets? Age 17? Age 18? He might even already be a multi-year professional, having gone through the professional setup in North Carolina at the Charlotte Hornets, and he'd already be making millions of dollars.
So, but wouldn't you need in a scenario like that a minor, like almost a minor league system for them to play and
right? Yeah.
Get
so,
better?
So they have a youth league basically.
Okay.
Yeah. So you can basically create youth teams, right? Charlotte or even the G League. I mean, the G League could be that. Or
the D League. Yeah.
Or, yeah. It's not the G League.
Now the G. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's sponsored by Gatorade, so it's the G League. Or you have a level below that, whatever. Like you have, you know, reserve teams or youth teams that compete against each other, and it's, you know, a full development system. Like, why aren't the NBA teams, kind of like how the baseball teams are, in charge of developing their own players? The NFL, the same thing. And it's because college football is too popular, and in college basketball is too popular. And in some respects, and here's another one, as I talk to people from outside of this country, they're like, why do you guys like college sports so much? Like, you know that it's way worse than professional sports, right? You know, North Carolina is so much worse than NBA teams, right? The quality isn't as good, and yet, you know, they play in front of sold out crowds every game. Why? I mean, people like their universities over in the UK, but they don't go watch them to play sports. But it's part of the culture here, and so it's so big that you're basically eliminating a $1 billion industry. But that's the thing: if it's a $1 billion industry, let's figure out a way that Zion Williamson doesn't have to play for free, so that, you know, when he gets hurt, he's getting hurt playing for free.
But you have to kind of treat, I would think, my thoughts on the subject have always been, if you're going to treat college like the developmental part of, like a developmental part of an athlete's career, then it has to be treated like a minor league system for the mm-hmm. NFL,
yeah.
for the NBA. And you have, but there has to be some kind of compensation that comes involved with that. If
Agreed.
You treat them like an amateur athlete or compensate them like they're athletes getting ready to go to the next level. But then you have also the kids who aren't good enough to make it to the next level in college, who aren't going to be worthy of that contract. Yeah. So there's got to be some kind of balancing act there. But it just drives me nuts that there's no, I don't know, I guess I don't like the fact that when I look at the NBA now versus what the NBA used to be, and maybe this is me being a curmudgeon, I love the fact that when, like, Larry Johnson came to the league, he was 4 years at UNLV, and his game was as polished as it was going to be. All these one-and-dones that come into the NBA drive me nuts because a lot of them sit the bench or they just have giant holes in their game, and you know that they could be that much better if they got the coaching before they
okay.
came to the league.
Okay, I can understand that. Coaching would be better if it came from NBA coaches, right? So if there is you're saying you like Larry Johnson coming to the league after 4 years in college. Imagine him being coached 4 years by an NBA coach whose whole job was player development. That might be an even better player. And so what I'm saying is,
well,
I think,
then are you saying like college basketball coaches aren't developmental guys? Like you can't.
No,
learn
I think
from
they can be. But
or
you're
Coach
also
or...
no, but you're also you're playing a third as many games as you play in the NBA. You have to take classes in between. If your full time plus money is being devoted to developing your craft and getting better, you're going to get better than if you're in college. College, there's too many things. Like, by the way, another thing that Coach K has to worry about, winning games. If you're an academy coach, you don't really have to worry about winning. You have to worry about your players getting better. And so maybe you're teaching them skills as opposed to getting them to win the game, or you're feeding the best guy the ball when you're trying to stress, you know, everyone getting better. Like, I think NBA teams should be in charge of developing NBA players, and you can have a separate, like you said, a separate amateur league where maybe even those players make money, but anyone who wants to play at the NBA at any time can be there. I think baseball is the perfect example because there are talented high school players that come out, they want to make money, and they go straight into a professional setup, and if you don't, then you can go to college, and you still have the opportunity to get better there and increase the amount of money that you can make as an amateur. But ultimately, that option is available. And that, for me, is the most important thing. Now, again, the more important thing at the moment is that Zion Williamson has a knee injury and he is going to miss tonight. There are people who are studying the video and saying it's not really an ACL, but it probably could be the end of his college basketball career, which would really suck for Duke, and people have enjoyed watching him, but he definitely, definitely has to err on the safe side here. All right, coming up next, it's CBS Sports Radio. Pharrell on the Bench is coming up next here on WQAM. Tomorrow night, I'll be back here at 6 p.m. For an hour show before Florida Panthers and Carolina Hurricanes. Have a good night, everyone.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.